Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Net at Night is brought to you by AOL Radio at AOL.com/podcasting. This is Net at Night with Amber MacArthur and Leo Laporte. Episode 15 for March 6th, 2007. Evhead. Net at Night is recorded before a live audience on TalkShoe.com. It's 2200 Greenwich Mean Time, 9 p.m. East Coast Time, and it's time for Net at Night. Good evening. I'm Leo Laporte from California.
And I'm Evan MacArthur from Toronto, Canada.
Via phone, because Skype has failed us.
Yes, it's causing us some problems tonight.
Skype or Toronto Hydro, one or the other.
I'm going to blame it on Rogers, actually.
It's all Rogers' fault.
That's my new theme lately.
Really? It's all Rogers'
fault?
Bit. Well, they're still paying me to do the lab, so I'm not going to blame them for anything.
Oh, no, you can't blame them, but you're dealing with a different side of them, so that's good. I'm talking more about the...
Rogers Internet.
The ISP side of things.
Yeah. So we have a couple of links, but really this show is going to be more about our guest, who is one of the most influential, most important people on the internet and has been for the last few years.
Yeah, we're going to talk to you, Evan, which is going to be very exciting because, as we all know, he's the guy behind Blogger and our favorite news service, Twitter. Or I should say your favorite news service, Leo, because I know you're on there all the time.
Yeah, I love Twitter. Evan lives in San Francisco. He started Blogger, sold it to Google, made a little bit of money, then took the money and invested it in Odeo, which is the parent company of that is Obvious. An interesting thing is Odeo recently went on the block. Obvious announced it was going to sell Odeo so that it could focus on Twitter, which surprised me a little bit. But we'll get Ev on in just a little bit. He's ready to go. But before we do that, can we talk a little bit about some of your links? Quite a few of them, too.
I know. I always send a lot of them. Well, the first thing I was going to mention is about news that BBC has partnered up with YouTube. And so they're now going to be putting some of their news clips onto YouTube and have some exclusive content on YouTube as well. I think it's just one of many sort of major news broadcasters who are realizing that they can access a totally different audience with YouTube and get all of the viewers that are on YouTube. Because I don't know how many people use YouTube, but the numbers are just astronomical.
The thing that's kind of surprising to me is that both CBS and Viacom turned their back on YouTube. Viacom decided to go with Juiced. CBS still has dreams of doing it themselves. They try to get everybody else, NBC and ABC to join them, but that didn't happen. What's wrong with being on YouTube?
I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I think it's great, actually. But, you've seen a lot of the companies like even NBC initially who kind of waffled on the idea of being on YouTube, and they were trying to pull everything off YouTube. And they seem to have this love-hate relationship with YouTube, and they're going back and forth all the time. It wasn't really a surprise to me that BBC made this announcement. I think, they especially with their tech coverage, it's one of the first sites that I go to all the time.
Yeah. You know what I've been using lately a lot? Is something called StumbleUpon. Do you know StumbleUpon?
Yeah, you know what? It's funny because StumbleUpon seems to be becoming more and more popular all the time. And I remember it was one of the first segments that I did on Call for Help when I started there in 2004. That and Blogger actually were, I think, two of my first eight segments on the show.
Wow, that's neat.
And now I hear everybody using StumbleUpon. It seems to be kind of coming back in fashion a little bit.
I tried it back then. It's a toolbar. It adds an extra toolbar to Firefox or Internet Explorer. You press the stumble button. It gives you a random site, but you can vote on the sites. And it's kind of like a live delicious. It's people sharing their links, cool links, and then you kind of randomly choose a link from that pile. It has some nice features over delicious, besides the fact that you're seeing the links live instead of just clicking on them by hand. You can choose what categories you're interested in. On the toolbar, you also have channels. So, for instance, if I'm in the mood to see a fun video, I just go to the video channel. But it also has web pages, pages linked by friends, news items, images. So it's a really kind of interesting way to stumble around on the net. But also,
yeah,
find
one thing I really like about it too is that you would think, because it is based on a community of people who are adding or suggesting content, is that the content wouldn't be that great. But when you start to stumble around, it's amazing, because I would say 90% of the time, the content that you end up stumbling upon is fantastic. It's really high quality, and it's not, you know, your average sort of, you know, small site that you wouldn't be interested in. It's fairly accurate.
That's where I found Musicovery, which you kind of liked.
I love Musicovery, and I've been telling everybody about it, but don't worry, Leo, I'm giving you lots of credit for it.
That's all
but
right.
It's a fun site. I remember a while ago we were talking about Live Plasma, which is another really interesting site that gave you a really interesting graphical interface where you could go and you could search for bands that you may like, as well as movies that you might like. And the thing about Musicovery, it's the same idea, but it kind of takes it a step further, and that's just musicovery.com, where you can go, and if you like reggae, you can choose different types of reggae, and then you can listen to the full song, and then also have the option to buy the song through the website. And it's just a fun site, and so many people, since I posted it on my blog and I talked about it, or am talking about it this week on Command N, people really seem to love it.
It's kind of like Pandora. How would you contrast it to Pandora, which you taught me about and I love still?
I think the difference between Pandora and Musicovery is that Pandora is one of these services where it is like you're just having a little radio station. It's a tiny little interface, a little box that you have in a browser window. Whereas Musicovery, it feels a little bit different because graphically it's very pretty when you go to the site. So you have all these different, I'm guessing it's based on Ajax or something. These boxes pop up and you can kind of explore in a different way than you can with Pandora. So I think the sites are different, but the idea behind them is the same, is that you're able to discover music based on musical interest that you already have. But Pandora, I think the scientific background behind Pandora is entirely different, because as we know from talking to Tim Westergren, that's entirely based on like scientific data, where they go and they log all these songs and they find similar songs, whereas Musicovery, I think it's probably just a little bit different.
You know, I saw an interview with Tim Westergren the other day in which he claimed, I find this hard to believe, that 1.5% of the internet's traffic now is Pandora.
Oh my goodness.
That much content is being pushed by Pandora.
That is amazing. Well, I remember when we discovered Pandora and we started using it, we were all just amazed. And then you meet Tim, and he's such a wonderful person. He's so passionate about what he does.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember, I think it was last year, where he was traveling all over the states in a truck that the Pandora had rented, and he was asking people in small towns to give him CDs so that they could add it to the Pandora database. And just a neat story. He's come to Toronto a couple of times, and every time I meet with him, he's just so passionate about music. And, has just developed a really cool service.
There's actually some serious news that could be very bad news for Pandora in the United States. It might be very good news for services like Last.fm, which is in the UK, and Musicovery, the service you just mentioned, because they're either in France or the UK also. But in the United States, this is just unaccountable. It looks like the Copyright Office is going to raise the fees that internet broadcasters have to pay, to such a point that many of these companies are going to go out of business. Some estimates are that it would cost Pandora several $100 million to pay these copyright fees.
Wow, we should probably get Tim back on maybe and chat with him a little bit about that, because I'm sure that's making him a little bit nervous as well.
Yeah, it's really a hot topic just now, buzzing all around the internet and among all the internet stations. Paradise Radio says we'll be out of business. Because we just don't have the ad revenue to support the amount of money that the record industry wants from us. It is a steep increase over the next few years. But what's really scary is this retroactive through all of 2006. So
you
would actually have to pay money for last year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I know. I'm really scared about this. You know, the record industry really seems to want to put internet radio out of business.
That is too bad. It'll be interesting, though, if that actually happens. I would love to see what happens with something like Pandora or these other internet radio services. If maybe what they'll do is they'll start signing on these independent sort of bands that aren't signed with any major label, and then, you know, possibly just stream their music, and that could be interesting.
I think
as well.
That's exactly what's going to happen. I think that's what has to happen. If the record industry gets this greedy and starts really putting the screws to internet radio, bye-bye. You know, their claim is, we don't get any promotional benefit from internet radio, not like we do from real radio, so we're going to charge you more. Well, I think they're going to be very surprised by what happens if they push this.
I, I think so, too. I mean, it's interesting. I don't know how much you follow the band Bare Naked Ladies. They're from Canada, and they're a really fun band. I know you've listened to them before. And
I love
it's interesting.
Them.
Oh, you've seen them play?
No, I just love their music.
Oh, you love them. Yeah, they're great. And if you listen to them talk about what they think in terms of music rights, is that the idea behind what they're doing is really to give away a lot of their music and have more and more people share it all the time. We've talked about it before where they put an entire album on a USB key and sold it at concerts. And, you know, I've
seen PureTrax is going to take DRM off of their music on PureTrax.
Yeah, I mean, that's what they want. In their mind, music is for sharing, and they see that they're going to make money by playing at concerts and by, you know, other people possibly buying their music online. And now they have this huge fan following, including a really neat YouTube video that I found online a while ago where people had done a Bare Naked Ladies video that was kind of like a tribute video to them, but it was based on one of their songs. And so, you know, I think the audience loves that, and they love the idea that a lot of these musicians are going out and they're starting their own labels, and they're kind of playing by their own rules instead of playing by the rules of the big record companies.
I think the record companies could be it. If you want to read more about this webcast royalty rate decision, and by the way, there is a period of appeal, but it's only a few weeks, so you probably, if you have an opinion on this, you want to act very quickly. Kurt Hansen, who writes the radio and internet newsletter, talks about this at kurthansen.com, KURTHANSON.com. I suggest reading it. He estimates that it's a royalty obligation from last year of about 1.28 cents per listener hour. That's going to go up about 50% in 2007, another 10-15% in 2008, and again and again, and it actually ends up being almost three times higher by 2010. In other words, the record industry is saying, we're going to put you out of business. We're very serious about this. It's really bad news. Let's get a couple more links. Then we want to get Evan Williams on, the man who created Blogger and is powering Odeo and Twitter and really one of the great innovators on the internet. You said USA Today has done a redesign. I didn't even know that.
Yeah, USAtoday.com redesigned their website. And I think the neat thing about this is that one of the producers who's been working on the site, he sent an email to us. Leo and I read it on your behalf because I know you've stopped reading email. And I posted on the bottom of the email I sent you on Gmail earlier. And he asked us to take a look at the site and give him some feedback on the site in terms of what we think of it. And, you know, initially it looks good when you go to the website. I read a review that Michael Arrington did on TechCrunch. And they've added user comments to every single article that they have. They have bigger photos.
That's great.
A lot more sort of social networking features on the website. Now, the only thing that kind of bothers me about it, if people are there right now on USAtoday.com, is the fact that it's two columns and it's this long scrolling page. And, you know, having worked in web design, I'm a big fan, especially for news sites, of them being kind of a three-column approach. Because I think that the amount of content you have on that page, it could be expanded so much if they broke it up differently. And it looks good, and it doesn't look cluttered or anything, but it could be a little bit better.
Interesting. To completely redesign your web page like that is a big deal. Hey, you want to hear a fast? You think Amber talks fast? Listen to this. This is
today. I'm going to recite the president for you as fast as I possibly can. Now, you may think that you can do it or that it's pretty simple, but most people forget at least one or two presidents. Right now, I'm going to attempt to say all of them as fast as I possibly can.
Great.
You ready? Okay.
Isn't that hilarious?
Okay.
Okay, she's really gearing up.
George Washington, John Adams, Thomas Jefferson, James Madison, James Monroe, John Quincy Adams, Andrew Jackson, Martin Van Buren, Harrison, John Tyler, James K. Polk, Zachary Taylor, Millard Fillmore, Pickler, Pierce, James Buchanan, Abraham Lincoln, Andrew Johnson, Ulysses Grant, Rutherford B. Hayes, James Garfield, Chester, Arthur, Grover Cleveland, Benjamin Harrison, Cleveland, Beckham, Lincoln,
Roosevelt,
had enough?
Isn't this funny?
It's bizarre.
I know. See, and the reason that I had to send this to you is because everybody always tells me that I talk so quickly. And so now I'm at the point where I'm really trying to, well, I haven't done it okay tonight. But
someday you're going to talk slowly.
I'm going to try to slow down a little bit. But that girl, I mean, she talks at least 10 times as fast as I'm talking.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. She says, can you do this? She wants to get in the Guinness Book of World Records. That's pretty funny.
I think she just might.
That's from Meta Cafe, a perfect example of all of the weird things that you can find on the internet. Give us a couple more, then we're going to bring in Ev. We're going to go a little long on this one, folks, because we did start late because of our technical issues. I just want to let you know.
Well, there was a couple of other links that I wanted to mention. One of the links was the Facebook.
The Facebook song?
Dad, the Facebook song. I did a story this week on Facebook because I'm getting bombarded with Facebook requests, and I'm getting a little bit addicted to Facebook. I'm kind of on Facebook the way that you're on Twitter right now, Leo.
Really? Yeah, because you started doing a little twitting, but never got really into it.
I never got really into it.
You've seen my Tumblr, though, haven't you?
Yeah, I like that. That's
I'm
cool.
really loving that. That's Tumblr.com. We'll get David Karp on. He's the guy who designed that. All right, so let me play. This is the Facebook song, Facebook.com song here. I don't know what that means.
I'm so lonely, 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 lonely. I'm so lonely.
Same guy in a variety of
Where can
places.
I find some friends? I know on Facebook, 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 the website. Won't you be my friend? Don't deny me. I just want some friends on Facebook. Will you be my friend? Please confirm me. I just want some friends on Facebook.
I don't want to call them kids, but.
Well, I don't understand. Is this a real song that they're doing a lip sync to, or is this actually them?
Well, as far as I know, it's them. They created the song.
Wow.
It sounds pretty good. Cool.
Yeah, it's boring, but it's good. I mean,
it's no Code Monkey.
It's no Code Monkey.
No.
Yeah. By the way, our friend Merlin Mann interviewed Jonathan Colton. Remember we talked about this and said, oh, they've got to go see him? He was there. He interviewed him, and it's on the MerlinManShow.com.
I know. I was so excited that Merlin Mann came out with his own show. And I guess it just launched last Monday. And
it got to number 5 on iTunes.
He's so good. He's so talented.
Yeah, we love Merlin. The phone
He's
guy.
He's really great. Now, Leo, what do you think of the link that I sent you about how to create your own Apple rumor?
We know how. We just do it on Mac Break Weekly. We make something completely preposterous up. But I think we could use a little professional help, and that's the idea. This is from the AppleGazette.com.
And this is really fun. So they have a bunch of different columns, and what you can do is you can create your own rumor. So you basically take, the first column, and then you add it to whatever content you want in any of the other columns, and you can create your own instant Apple rumor. And it's very similar to some of the stuff you see on some of the Apple Insider sites and rumor sites.
A confirmed source has given us this exclusive news about a ultra-portable iMac and widescreen iPhone no later than fourth quarter 2007. It worked.
I know. It definitely worked. And so I think it's hilarious because there's always so many rumors out there. But the idea that they have, 9 different columns where you can go and you can, just kind of make something up on your own.
Let's bring in Evan Williams. I'm going to call him right now on Skype. Evan is 34 years old, young guy, and yet has done so much to really make the internet more usable, starting with Blogger. Evan, it's great to talk to you. Thank you for joining us on Net at Nine.
You too, Leo. My pleasure.
So was Blogger your first venture into the internet world?
It was the first one that I talk about, really.
Okay. You got something else you want to share?
I can't really hear Evan. I don't know if
that... I'll turn Evan up a little bit for you. Here we go.
I know, but all I heard was you have something else you want to share, and it sounds exciting, so...
Well, I don't think I said I want to share it, but I did start with internet ventures very early in, actually 1994.
Wow.
And, in Nebraska of all places, which was, as I like to call it, the right place or the right time in the wrong place.
Yeah, no kidding.
So I did a lot of envious reading of what was going on out here in Silicon Valley and tried to get ventures going back there, but it was mostly a learning experience for me.
Were you in high school at the time?
No, I was in. I had dropped out of college actually my sophomore year, and I was always scheming on something or another. And I had just had all these ideas. I had stumbled upon the internet, decided it was the next big thing, and I don't know. I think we tried about 10 different ideas, and never really got it off the ground, considering we had no money nor really coding skills.
So how did you get involved in Blogger?
Sorry, I can't hear you very well.
Did you not hear Amber? All right, I'm just...
I heard her, but it's kind of distorted or something.
Yeah, she wanted to know how you got involved in Blogger.
Okay. The Blogger started in 99. We started the company Pyra, my co-founder Meg Horahan and I, and Paul Bausch, who joined shortly thereafter. And we started the company to actually do a productivity slash collaboration type application. And
blogging was around at that time, yes?
It was sort of around. I think in early 99 is when it started being sort of talked about within a small community. Dave Weiner was, of course, at the heart of a lot of that. And I remember reading Dave's blog for a long time. Of course, no one called them blogs at the time. They were web blogs.
Right.
And there was a lot of debate on what the definition of a weblog was. And
I was using, I think, a program called Gray Matter at the time. Which mm-hmm. It was a very simple program.
Yeah, Gray Matter was good. I think it did that. Was that early? Or was that like 2000 maybe?
Maybe it was 2000.
Sure.
Yeah, you might be right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, 99 was pretty early. So it was pretty much Dave Weiner and Frontier and that user land, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that kind of thing. And then there was actually a program called PETAs, which I think is still up at PETAs.com. PETA, like pita bread.
Right.
And that was the first hosted app that I was aware of anyway.
How about LiveJournal? Was that around by then?
LiveJournal may have started around then. Maybe around the same time. Of course, there was a little bit of difference in the journaling world was around for a while before the weblogs.
Right.
People made more of a distinction at the time before realizing it's all one big thing.
Well, you made it easy to do, and that was, I guess, really the thing that made blogs take off.
Well, we tried to make it easy to do. We should have been smarter and made it easier earlier, because when we created Blogger, I don't know if anyone remembers, but you actually had to have a website already. You had to have FTP access to a server.
And
for that matter, you had to know for the entire first year from August of 99 when we launched it till almost exactly a year later, we didn't have the hosting part. We didn't have Blogspot. Because we were web geeks, and we kind of created it for ourselves and other web geeks, and we thought, well, we already have these websites, and we don't want to host on someone else's domain, and also we don't want to get into the web hosting business because that seems really competitive and not fun, so we'll just make this. It's really just like an FTP editor that we built, and you wrote in Blogger, and then you pushed out, and that it still has that feature. Of course, 90% of people use host on Blogspot. And that's actually why Blogspot has a different name, which has always been confusing for people, because we just put it up and thought, well, okay, we'll be a host, because clearly people need that. But that wasn't the original idea at all.
So, yeah, that's right. It always confused me a little bit. Well, I remember showing Blogger. Like, it wasn't an FTP, so we on Tech TV, we didn't show it until you'd already kind of matured it to the point where it was actually hosted, I think.
Yeah, in 99, we would have been, I'm sure we weren't on Tech TV, because that would have been very thrilling for us. I mean, not that it wasn't at the time, but
I would have remembered
had we been. Yeah, I mean, 99, we were in a basement in Soma, and we knew no one, and we were in obscurity.
It's pretty amazing, though, if you look at the evolution of Blogger and see, you know, how much it's grown and how many people are using it. And you know, in the past couple of years, I haven't noticed that it's really changed that much.
Yeah, we definitely. It's gotten a lot of flack for not changing enough, especially after going to Google and obviously, or at least theoretically, having a lot more resources than we had when we were independent, which is true to a certain extent. I'd certainly, you know, anyone who has something like that has about the next 25 years worth of features thought out in the first 2 months. So there are tons of things that I still would love to see. And on the other hand, a lot of the changes have gone into things that your average user, or especially your geek user, the people who comment on these things, would never notice. And we spent a tremendous amount of time just making it easier to use. We, you know, made it work in 9 different languages. You know, obviously scaling is always an issue. So once we went to Google, we realized the whole purpose, we have to be mainstream. We're not going to be cutting edge on features and please, you know, the hardcore bloggers, because it doesn't make sense for Google to run this unless it's as mainstream as possible.
Google acquired you in 2003. Are you still working on Blogger?
Am I?
Yeah.
Now or no?
No.
No.
When did you stop working on Blogger?
I stopped working on Blogger in October 2004.
So you stayed a year, and that was it.
Yeah, stayed about a year and a half, a little over a year and a half, and left. And then most of my team stayed until fairly recently.
And then after that, you started Odeo.
That's right.
And I know, Leo, again, that's another thing that we did on Call for Help. I remember we started to play with Odeo, and it was just after we had all started our own podcast. And the idea that someone would make it really simple for everybody was definitely an exciting time.
I had really high hopes for Odeo. especially because it looked like this. You started, I don't know, right around when Apple started doing podcasts. Maybe you were a little earlier.
Yeah. The company, we started the company in January. I think Apple released 4.9 in June.
Yeah, and that changed everything. But I hated how Apple, and I still do, in fact, I hate it more now, dominates the podcast space. And I was really hopeful that Google, Yahoo, Odeo would come along and really give us some alternatives to iTunes. What happened?
Yeah. Well, we definitely had the theory that we would do so. In long term, you have to believe that the being on the web and being open, being device agnostic is going to win. But certainly Odeo and no one has the impact that iTunes does in terms of the distribution of podcasts. And I'm not entirely sure why that is. I think partially is because the long term open and on the web will win. It's not long term yet, which is something we underestimated at Odeo. We had that story, but we underestimated how much iTunes really impacted us, because we built our first 6 months of our company is basically was building what we thought was a quantum leap in the listening experience for podcasts. Because, you know, prior in January of 2005 or so, podcasts were getting a lot of hype, but there was still, you know, copy and paste an RSS feed into this shareware open source downloader, and you'll get these MP3s on your desktop, and it was pretty painful, and it's clearly not a mainstream user experience yet. And we spent a lot of time trying to build a much better experience, make it much more accessible for your average person, and then iTunes basically lowered the bar to the same place, you know, across 10 million desktops, and that's what we had been working on. So we're no longer offering enough extra value.
So that pretty much killed it? I mean, or what? I mean,
it didn't kill it. It just...
It's still around. I mean, you could still...
Around.
We're still on Odeo. I think we're still... We were for a long time. Twit was number one on Odeo for a long time.
I think it is. Until we screwed up and deleted it or something.
Yeah. You heard about that.
I didn't hear about that. What happened?
Well, all of a sudden we weren't on Odeo anymore, and I sent a note off, and you fixed it right away. But I thought, what happened? We've been deleted.
No. Yeah. We were going through some hard times at the time. So.
Well, had I known, I really wanted Odeo to succeed. For a long time I had the Odeo. You started doing audio email, and I thought that was really cool. You attempted to make it easy to make podcasts. You did some really great and innovative things. But it's true. I guess you're absolutely right that you have to have a lot of patience. It takes a long time, and sometimes you just don't have the time.
Yeah, and I think that was a big part of it with Odeo. Is I still believe in a lot of the fundamental ideas that set us on that path, and clearly podcasts haven't gone away and are getting bigger. And, you know, Blogger, it took years and years before there was any sort of substantial, you know, notable usage, you know, in the
really
hundreds of thousands.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So seen that happen before.
Sure. Sure. And, you know, we kind of got caught up in the excitement in early 2005. And I think it's just going to take a lot longer. And that's fine. And the whole reason we're making a transition now is because, and it's not like we're shutting it down or anything. We think there's a viable business there eventually. It's just we're going to do something else, and it should go to someone who is more suited to do that.
You announced a couple of weeks ago, Obvious announced that it was going to sell off Odeo. Have you had some feelers?
It's gone really well, actually. We don't have anything to announce yet, but I was really pleased with the response, at least the private response. I didn't go seeking out the public response, but there's a lot of people interested. And I've been talking, basically my last 2 weeks have been in having those discussions.
I know. I've been watching you on Twitter.
It's too hard to hide these days.
Yes. Yes. I've had to be quiet. But it's gone really well. I've been really pleased. There's definitely a lot of people still excited and still investing in the space and who look at Odeo as a really valuable asset to either take on and take off from where we were, or to add to their strategy that they already have going on. So I'm really excited. And it looks like actually we're about to enter in a due diligence with one firm.
Fantastic. I'm really glad to hear that.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think it's a great platform.
Maybe we can talk a little bit about where I can find Leo and where he is at every moment of the day now.
Well, this is the thing that's kind of surprised me, because I saw the announcement on the Obvious blog that you were going to sell Odeo to concentrate on Twitter. And I thought, huh? Did you realize what Twitter was going to be when you started? Tell us about how Twitter began.
Okay. So Twitter is an interesting story, because Twitter started actually almost a year ago, believe it or not, and as part of Odeo. And at the time, it evolved from, we're in this big brainstorming phase, basically, and thinking, well, maybe we should be more radical with Odeo and try some different stuff. And we were talking about mobile, and we were talking about SMS. And one of our developers, Jack Dorsey, had been thinking about an idea for a long time, like five or six years, and that came out of his experiences with LiveJournal and AIM, and he sort of had this vision that is now Twitter, but he talked about it in terms of Odeo, and at first there was an audio idea, you know, and voice messaging and stuff, and then we thought, well, why does it need the voice? I mean, it needs the voice to be related to Odeo, but actually it'd be a lot simpler and easier if we started out with there's no voice component at all, and we build a prototype of that.
What was his elevator pitch to you? I mean, how did he describe what he wanted to do?
I don't even remember for sure.
It's kind of hard to describe what Twitter is, to be honest.
I know. When I try to describe it to people, they don't totally understand it. The first reaction I get from people is, why would you want to do that?
That is the most common reaction to Twitter, yes.
And then you start using it and you realize why.
we actually want to put on the homepage all these blog posts we found. There's like, at first I thought this was idiotic, but now it's really fun and addictive.
I'm one of them. It's where exhibitionists meet voyeurs for fun and games. It's where some people say it's like away messages on steroids. It's it's basically people answering in 140 characters or less the question, "What are you doing right now?"
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what it is. I don't know if that does it justice, since it's so much more than that.
Some people have called it present tense blogging, or real time blogging, which is another way to think about it. And interestingly, why would you ever bother doing that was a big question that people said about blogs, five years ago, which is encouraging to me.
I think that's really good comparison, because if you think of when blogs started, there were so many people who were using blogs for the sole purpose of going online, starting a blog, and saying, "Hey, you know, I just had Lucky Charms for breakfast, and I had a cup of tea," and it was a lot. It was, you know, people didn't really know how to use it. We use blogs exactly, and it changed so much. And you could kind of see Twitter go in that direction as well.
Yeah, and it's interesting. Blogs were much less directed, of course, in the really early days. They were called web blogs because people said, well, this is a log of where I go on the web.
I had toast, and I saw this website, and my cat is cute.
Yeah, yeah. But that was actually an evolution, because at first it was, I went to this site, and maybe
links.
I say something about it, and then it was just links and possible commentary. And that's what distinguished it from a journal, because journals were about my life and what I'm doing and, you know, namby-pamby stuff. And, you know, the journal world, web bloggers didn't really want anything to do with, and vice versa.
Well, because I'm a great big egotist and can't get enough exposure, I've found this continuum from Twitter at the very most basic, you know, one line, simple blog, to a Tumblr. I'm using Tumblr, which is a new thing. Mm-hmm. And that Tumblr is more like that, what you just talked about, which is kind of just you throw out links, basically. Not a lot of prose.
Right.
And then I use Vox as a blogging platform where it is prose. It's a journal. And there is a there's a continuum from the simplest of Twitter to the full blown blog.
Right. Twitter is interesting in that we decided to direct it with this question, what are you doing? Of course, people can be very creative in answering that question and sometimes often just ignore the question.
Right.
But I think it's really helpful to ask it because it's, you know, when we had Blogger at first was a white box. You know, it didn't even have a link field or a title field. It's just a white box. Type in this thing. And that was really hard for people. We learned eventually that the way to demo Blogger was certainly not to show them the app.
Right.
It would be to show them a blog and to say, okay, here's how you make one of those.
Here's what you get. Not here's how you do it. Yeah.
Yes. But Twitter still, so Twitter is easy to describe in like what it does, but you're absolutely right in that the why would you want to do that is an even more prevalent question.
Now, what about the name Twitter? Because people have asked me that as well. You know, Leo, a lot of people think that you have some affiliation with Twitter because of twit.tv.
Right. Well, I thought about suing Ev, then I thought, no, he's too nice. I'm not going to say
he's a good guy.
I worry about that.
No, I had no interest in it. But I understand it because Odeo's mascot's a bird.
It was, Odeo mascot's a bird. And, you know, Twitter's just one of those names that comes out of, oh, my God, what are we going to call this new thing? And you think of 10,000 things, and someone throws out Twitter. I think it was Noah Glass. And we liked it. No one was using the domain. And it's like, I mean, it's actually a real word, unlike a lot of, you know,
has
Web
vowels.
2.0 products.
Yep.
Yeah, it has vowels. You know what? We made a stupid mistake when we first launched Twitter because we had TWTTR, like no vowels. And we launched with that, even though in the meantime we had bought the version with vowels.
Oh, interesting.
We bought the vowels, as we like to say. And and I don't know why, but because we're using TWTTR in development, and we thought, well, this is kind of, and it's text and, you know, making things really short and text messages and stuff. We thought for some reason it's a good idea to launch with that, but it was not. It was a bad branding decision, and we had already paid for the other domain and kind of intended to. It was sort of an inside joke that went too far.
You know, it's funny because this stuff never dies. I saw somewhere a post of the original Twitter webpage or something like that.
Uh-huh.
It's with the no vowel version.
Yeah.
It's going to now go down in history. Oh, yeah, I've seen the... I was around for the no-vowel version. So Twitter is... the process of twitting is very simple, and there are a lot of ways to do it. You could do it from the website. There are clients. The Icon Factory wrote a cute little client for the Mac called Twitter. In fact, there's probably 18 different ways to do it on the Mac. There's a Firefox extension. You can do it in your search box.
Yeah.
I'm paranoid about that one because I know I'm going to end up entering a search command. You know, Britney Spears.
That's a good point.
Britney Spears underwear, and it's going to go on Twitter.
Or lack thereof.
Yeah, right.
Yes, that's funny. That we had that exact conversation in our office because I think one of our developers actually did Twitter a search query. Fortunately, it was benign, but
I can just see the trouble coming from that. But so then it goes on and there are as many ways to consume it as there are ways to do it. You can do it on a phone. You can do it on your BlackBerry. You can do it from Instant Messenger. Both send and receive. You can you choose who you want to follow. Now, Amber made a little bit of a mistake because everybody who followed her, she added them as friends, and she realized quite quickly that you don't really want too many people that you're following.
I was trying because Leo. I was trying to live up to your expectations that I would have 1,000 followers so quickly, and I kept getting all these requests for people to become friends, and I just accepted everything because I'm used to using MySpace and Facebook and those sites where you just accept everything.
I have almost 2,000 followers, but only 47 friends. You don't.
Yeah.
You wouldn't want to follow 2,000 people. You'd be getting tweets every 3 seconds. You know, constantly.
Yeah. Yeah. But that was actually
the hard way.
A design change. At one point, the relationship model was actually more Facebook or MySpace-like, where you would get a request, and if you accepted them, the only way for them to get your Twitters was for you to get theirs.
Right.
And you didn't have to get them on the phone, but they were at least in your timeline. And we changed it to more of a Flickr or more of a blog model,
right,
because we realized there were people. It was a problem. So now that's why it's even more like a blog and less like one of your social networks because people can just subscribe to you and you can ignore them.
Right.
Gotcha. So, and what do you use Twitter for?
Just for fun. I don't know. Yeah. I have, I think, Leo has surpassed me by far, but I did have the most followers until Leo came on.
Sorry.
And I
have to stop creating accounts. I promise I'll stop.
You got that bot working?
Yeah,
to,
overnight. Yep.
Yeah. And I just use it like a normal user. I just, you know, say what I'm up to, and it's fun. I use it through SMS a lot.
It's
and
somehow
the web.
Compelling. I just I had the same reaction when I saw Blogger and when I've seen when you see something on the net that is new and innovative and kind of you can't quite grok it, but you see the compelling nature of it. Mm-hmm. That's when you really go, I think this is good. This is interesting. Mm-hmm. This is new. How many people use Twitter? How big is it?
Well, it feels like it's everyone in the world if you're in you know, San Francisco and a web geek, but
it's true. It is all of our friends use it basically.
Yeah, exactly. So it's very early adopter still. It's in the tens of thousands.
International though, because I see a lot of foreign language tweets.
You know, you're right. It's probably only about 50% US, and I find that it seems to be true with every new web app these days though. Even if you don't localize it, it's about 50% US. And I don't know, you know, and for Twitter in particular, the UK is really big, mm-hmm. and then there's a lot of usage in, say, Brazil, and I'm not sure where else.
It makes sense that it would be big in countries where text messaging is big, because it kind of fits that model.
Yes.
Although I don't use it that way. I don't want that. Well, my bill would go through the roof. I don't have unlimited text messages.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel as though it's funny because it's one of those things, too, in Toronto where I've started to hear more and more people signing on for Twitter. So it's kind of catching on here a little bit. So you'll hear, you know, all of a sudden I'll get an invite from someone who's in Toronto. And sometimes it's one of those things with web services that it only takes, you know, X number of people. And then all of a sudden, it, you know, again, sort of hits the tipping point where, you know, so many people are on it and it becomes almost mainstream in the geek crowd, I should say.
How do you grow this, though? I mean, Where do you go from here?
In theory, it should be highly viral, and
it is very much.
It is definitely viral. I think so. We haven't yet gotten really great at getting people to invite other people. I mean, that functionality is there, but I think a lot of our growth has come from the blogs. And we get the blogger crowd, and then they blog about it, and people sign up, and I think it has the potential, though, to just go nuts with viral growth.
Would you then put ads on it? I mean, how would you monetize?
We'll see. I think we're doing some experiments, or at least talking to some people who want to use it for marketing purposes. Not necessarily putting ads on it that you would notice, but say someone has a TV show or a movie they want to promote or some businesses are using it. We're not charging any of these people now, but they may, character from a movie may, you know, it's another communication vehicle.
Right.
And it seems like you can monetize a communication vehicle because certain people, you know, it's profitable to them to communicate.
Some interesting things have happened. For instance, there are a number of people posing as other, Condoleezza Rice was on, she seems to have quieted down, but she was there for a mm-hmm. while. And these are obviously people posing as,
right.
There's a couple of Wozniaks. There's a Darth
Steve
Vader,
Jobs.
Steve Jobs, Luke Skywalker. Darth Vader mm-hmm. seems to be the most. He stays in the character the most.
Yeah, he's popular.
Yeah.
You know, I got a request from Piero Midier and added me, and I.
Oh wow.
I looked and I thought, oh, well, this is fake, because I was used to this by now,
right.
And deleted him, and then.
Oh no.
Someone let me know. I think it's actually Pierre.
It's kind of neat, though, how you get some of these services where you end up getting your own little stars within the service. You know, the people like Darth Vader. And
that happened with Moblogs also,
Yeah, they're just kind of like web superstars in these certain services.
You've done some interesting things. You covered Sundance. Mm-hmm. I imagine that South by Southwest is going to be a great big coming out party for Twitter.
We're actually doing a big thing at South by Southwest. Are you going?
I was going. I was going to be on a panel, and then unfortunately, I have to go to a radio and records conference this weekend. I'm really disappointed because I think this may be a very critical South by Southwest.
It should be fun.
Yeah.
I mean, South by Southwest, we always go to. It's always a lot of fun, but yeah. It sounds like it. I went to get my usual hotel room like 2 months ago, and
already
it was
sold out.
And I was
yeah.
like, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're actually doing an interesting sponsorship thing. We're going to have Twitter screens in the hallways, and people can do this thing where they join Twitter, basically saying I'm here, and then their Twitters, if they're public, will show up on these screens. And we're still trying to figure out how to do the event thing, but I think it has a lot of potential, and
yeah.
we're going to try it at South by Southwest.
Scoble has done a grassroots version, saying, hey, if you're going to be at South by Southwest, let me know, I'll add you. He wants to create his own kind of little South by Southwest Twitter group.
Cool. Maybe we'll just mirror all Scoble's friends.
That would probably be sufficient.
Yeah.
I'm very sad. I'm going to miss this. I can't tell
you. I know.
I feel like this is going... I mean, it's bigger and bigger every year, but I feel like there's something happening. And, Amber was there last year, and we did some coverage. But
Are you going to be there this year, Amber?
You know what? I was trying to go, and I'm just not going to be able to get away from work. And I was there last year, and it was definitely the best conference that I've ever been at. And like Leo said, I'm sure it's going to be even better this year. And last year was... I was there for probably 3 days, and that's where I met a lot of people. Like, I met Andrew Barron from Rocket Boom. I met just so many people, and it's a different type of conference because I feel as though you get a lot more time to kind of hang out and talk to people, and it feels much more like a community than it does kind of a salesy conference, which is what I think some of the tech conferences or web conferences are like. So it just has an entirely different vibe to it. But a great vibe. I mean, Leo, that's when we started talking to the guys from Big in Japan, and we were talking about the web community
Brian
being
Oberker,
kind of like a bunch of internet hippies and that whole theme. And South by Southwest, it feels like that's the
Woodstock.
Epicenter of that.
Frankly, feels like Woodstock.
Yeah, it really does.
Yeah. We're going to take calls for Evan. Can you stick around just a few more minutes? Because we started late, so I'd like to go to 10 after if we can. Can you do
you
that?
Bet.
Okay.
Yep.
So get in the queue if you have a question for Evan Williams. There's certainly a lot he can talk about. You know how to get on if you're in talk show. Just, I don't know, you do do whatever it is that you do, because I don't know how it works. Is Twitter your big thing right now? What are you doing now, and what do you look forward to doing next?
So Twitter is definitely the big thing right now. As you know, I made a big organization change last October, where I bought the assets of Odeo Inc. from the shareholders and the investors. And
I was blown away by that. That was an amazing story when you did that. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's gone very well. I mean,
and you did
I'm
that because you wanted to get control back? Why did you do that?
I did that because I just wasn't... We were at a point with Odeo where it was sort of... It was okay. It was going to take a lot more energy and effort to make it something really big that would justify the VC investment we had. We'd raised $5 million. We had spent a couple million of that. And we were struggling a little bit, but it wasn't like time to say, okay, this is a failure, give investors money back. So the normal thing would have just been to stick it out and say, okay, well, let's discover something that's really going to make this take off. But that was just sort of uninspiring for myself and the team. And Twitter was started and Twitter was going. We didn't know if it was going to work or not. We didn't know if it was going to be a big thing. But basically, I just realized that the dynamics of the company weren't right for myself. And I needed to make a change. And the options seemed to be, well, stick it out, which I was neither optimistic about nor did that sound fun. To shut it down, admit defeat and give investors what money we had left, or just buy it all myself and make. And I landed on the last one because I thought there was still value in Odeo and Twitter. I didn't really feel good about saying, well, this is a failure, because it wasn't necessarily a failure. It was just, it just wasn't working for me. And so I just said, okay, let's try something new.
And you let everybody off the hook, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's
amazing. I gave the investors. I paid enough to so the investors. No one lost money. A couple people made money, and it allowed me to continue with Twitter and the assets we had, and build the kind of company I wanted to build, and I have a lot more fun doing it.
Neat. Really, really a neat story. You ready to take calls? Amber, do you have any more questions for Ev before we...
No, I don't. I'm just laughing because I'm on Twitter right now and I'm looking at all the messages, and it seems that, you know, almost everybody is listening to you, Evan, on Twitter.
Oh, my gosh.
I like how this is all coming together. Maybe it's just the San Francisco branch of Geeks Anonymous. I don't know, but it just feels like such a great community. And we're, you know, we're all spread out, really. But yep. It's just an amazing thing, and that's why I'm really sad about missing South by Southwest. I didn't have a choice. My radio show got syndicated, and the syndicator is part of this. I'm speaking at the Radio and Records Conference, so I have to do that. But maybe next year. I keep saying that. Maybe next year.
Hopefully. Yeah, we should definitely take some calls. I'm sure people have lots of questions.
Let's start with Deus Twilight. Your first name, your real first name, and where are you calling from, Deus Twilight?
Hey, Leo.
Hey.
What's... I'm Justin from Georgia.
I ask you this every time, but I, you know, maybe people didn't hear it last time. Would you, do you have a question for Ev?
Yes. I'm, me myself, I haven't used Twitter because I'm not used to going on and typing in what I'm doing because it would distract me from what I am doing. So I'm thinking about, okay, can he create, like, a little app that works in the background and just kind of watches what I do? Like, I'm checking my email. I'm listening to, I'm talking on TalkShoe. I just dialed in, I just got into Skype. I'm on Firefox looking at a link.
That sounds like a familiar concept. I might. Is there anything like that, Ev, out there?
I don't think that exists yet. The good news is there's a very open and easy API for Twitter. So if it's not been built, it probably will be.
You could write, "I'm watching you." And there's a neat program for the Mac called Slife at S-L-I-F-E. It's the old, I can't remember the name, on something. But anyway, if it does follow you around, I imagine it'd be fairly easy to have it kind of talk to Twitter. Avila Fain, welcome to Net at Night.
Hello.
Hello.
How you doing tonight?
Very well.
How you doing tonight?
First name.
Andy from Andy from Phoenix.
Hey,
how you
Andy.
Doing? I got a couple. I got a question for him, and I got a question for you, Leo. Okay.
Yep.
For him, has he ever thought of making a mobile version of Twitter?
Well, it is mobile.
Like you can on your cell phone. Well, on your cell phone, no. Like an interface for your cell phone, so people can go out and have their phones. I think that would be more better.
404040.
Yeah. I'm not sure I understand the question. Oh, mobile. Mobile.
Yeah,
I thought I understood a different word. No, it is. It's all through SMS. You can text to 40404. I think you put an extra.
I put an extra
O in there.
Yeah,
40404. Just text there what you're doing, and you can basically do it all through there. In fact, it was originally all about the mobile, and later we became more device agnostic. But that's why the limit is 140 characters,
right?
And that's why it's only text, is all around this idea of anywhere, anytime, ubiquitous SMS.
I know Justine does it all the time from her mobile phone, and then you know other people use IM. I use I have an Apple script that does it. I have a variety of different ways to do it. What is the back end, Evan, for this?
It's all Ruby on Rails.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a testament to Ruby on Rails. And you had a question also, Avila?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
The other question is for you, Leo. You
yeah.
gotta sell me something. You have to sell me something. Your Twit hoodie. Is it warm?
Is the Twit?
I look at it on the
You're
internet,
in Arizona. Right? What do you care?
Yeah,
well,
really.
I use a windbreaker in the morning when I go. It's about 40,
we got the new
out here in the morning.
We got the new hoodies. They're made by Scotty Vest. They're being sold on ThinkGeek. We decided this time to go to brand names instead of doing it ourselves. And it's a very warm. The fleece is very nice. The hoodie is more like jersey material, so it's not super warm. But I think they're very nice, and the logos are not ginormous like they used to be. I think you'll like them a lot. And we don't make – it's not really a money-making proposition for us. I think it's a good thing to have good merchandise. You probably have caps and hats and sweatshirts and all that stuff, don't you, Evan? No?
We don't yet. No. That's never got around to that. That's, well, actually, we just got T-shirts for South by Southwest. Cool.
Don't you know you're supposed to start with the T-shirts, then come
that
up
with... That was one of bloggers' main revenue sources.
Yeah, come up with a concept after the T-shirt. Name first, then T-shirt, then concept.
Rob's... It'll be good when all these web T-shirts, they all become retro, too, you know, in a year or so.
Exactly. Robster, welcome to Netit.
Good evening.
How you doing? First name and city, please.
Good evening. First name is Rob. The city is Del Mar, California.
Ah, beautiful Del Mar. Down by the racetrack.
Yes, down by the racetrack, and where the turf meets the surf, as they say.
Sounds nice.
Well, how are you tonight?
Very well. Welcome to Net at Night. What, you have a question for
Thanks so much. Comment? Yeah, I sure do. You know, I've sort of been, you know, the evolution of podcasting, I mean, it's just been gone through such tremendous change. Particularly in the last couple of years, and I'm wondering, as we get wider pipes, as they say, as we get more bandwidth here in the United States, I'm just wondering, do you foresee a possibility of maybe video podcasting at some point, or is that just bandwidth prohibitive?
We're doing quite a bit of video podcasting, actually.
Yeah, I'd let Leo speak that. That's we never took on video with Odeo just because we wanted to distinguish ourselves as the only non-video site on the internet, but
you were looking at YouTube, but, saying they'll never make any money. Let's not do that.
Exactly. Yeah, that was perhaps unfortunate, but I've certainly watched some video podcasts, and Leo does
a
lot of that.
We make a few.
Right?
Pixel Core does. We actually have. I should give a little plug for our Gear Media Tech conference, which is coming up, a 3-day it's actually going to be everything you ever want to know about making audio and video podcasts. Pixel Core is putting it on. Go to pixelcore.com for more information. It's going to be at the Zeum in San Francisco, March 28th, 29th, and 30th. And Alex really is the video king, and he says so much information is your ears will bleed. So that's his idea of a great come on, great marketing.
What I'm not, Leo, what's your take though on the video podcast? If you take that definition as in a feed and downloading to your, you know, downloading versus the YouTube streaming.
I think most people are watching on the web. Now, I don't have the stats, but I'll tell you, when we make a video podcast or Twit, it's about 1/10 the audience, or maybe not that, 1/6 the audience size. However, I think a lot of people do watch it on the web. And yeah, I know Revision 3 is doing very well. Amber has one command end. What are the percentages of your people who download and people who watch on the web?
I think for the most part, a lot of them are watching on the web, you know, in terms of our stats, but there are some people who, you know, iTunes is obviously the biggest traffic for us, but there are still a lot of people who are coming to the website and just watching. We have like a YouTube file up, which is just a flash file, who are watching it that way as well. iTunes, I think, is the biggest, that's where we get the biggest traffic.
But I think YouTube and the kinds of traffic that generates dwarfs everything that's being done in podcasting. I mean, you know, when you're talking about 1 million downloads of a video on YouTube, I mean, there's nothing in podcasting going anywhere near that.
Yeah, you can't even you really can't compete with that.
No. Randy South, welcome. You're next on Net at Night. Hello, Randy.
Hello.
Hi there.
Yes, this is Randy from Katrina Scarred, South Mississippi. Didn't have just a specific question, but... I kind of wanted to go back to a subject from last week about the lawsuit against the MP3.
The Alcatel Lucent lawsuit against Microsoft. $1.5 billion.
Yeah, $1.5 billion. If that stands, what do you think that will do with podcasting, you know, for MP3 in general?
Actually, it is a little bit of a concern there because... MP3 is not an unencumbered format. It's owned by Fraunhofer and by Lucent and by Alcatel. And so up to now, if you're doing it for non-commercial purposes, they don't charge you. But that could be bad news. I think we would just go to Ogg Vorbis. That's all we would do. Of course, you couldn't play it on your MP3 player, but I don't know. That's an interesting question. Let's hope it doesn't happen. Bent. Welcome to Net at Night. What's your first name? Where are you calling from?
How are you doing?
I'm great, Ben.
Yeah, I'm Ben from Calgary, Alberta, Canada. And,
all right, another Canadian.
Quick question is I want... Yeah, you've had Get a Love Connect, don't you?
I do.
But The big thing I have is I want to set up a sort of a tech support type system, an online type system, you know, Web 2.0. And I'm really not a programmer. I've got the conceptual stuff together, but and it would be linking together a bunch of stuff that's already out there. No, my big question would be, is it worth me trying to find a coder to work on, sort of bash something together and just kind of run with it and see where it goes? Or maybe I should even take a coding class or maybe figure out Ruby? Like,
did you do all the coding, yourself, Ev, initially? Or
I did a lot of the coding for Blogger. I haven't done much. I actually still do coding for Odeo. I've never coded for Twitter, but that's only because I have people much better than I am.
You know, I look at somebody like Kevin Rose, who came up with a great idea. He wasn't a coder, so he went and he hired somebody up your way, actually, Amber, in Ontario.
Yeah, out of Halifax.
Yeah, or Halifax, that's right. Did a great job.
Does he use Renacoder for that?
I think he probably just went out and put a note on Craigslist, I would guess.
Yeah, I think it was very loose in terms of how he found it. It's Owen, who's now in San Francisco, but I think...
And by the way, an equity partner in Dig, and probably doing very well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But yeah, I think it was just through networking and the kind of tech community. And
I think that's the way
to
do it. Putting
the word out there that you need someone.
Yeah, I wouldn't learn programming if you want to do something like that. I mean, it's fairly easy to kind of get prototyped up in Ruby on Rails, but really, if you really are serious about it, programmers are easy to find.
They are, and I would say if you think you might have the aptitude for it, I would highly recommend
it's fun
doing it, though, because you're so empowered once
right.
you can do it yourself.
Right.
But some people are into it and some people aren't. And if you're not and you absolutely don't have a mind for it or it doesn't appeal to you, then absolutely go find someone.
It is a wonderful hobby and it's a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. Things like
Ruby. And it's not as hard as you think.
No, absolutely. It's like knitting, basically. Justine,
exactly like
I know
knitting.
Who this is. Justine from Pittsburgh, PA, and also one of the very active Twitters. Hi, Justine.
Hi,
Justine.
How are you?
Justine loves Twitter and hates Blogger, Evan.
Well, I only have something to do with one of them at this point, so I'll take that.
Well, that's good. Yeah, I used to use Blogger, back in the day, but now it's just, I know, it doesn't seem to be working out for me too well.
Back in the day, you were complaining about Blogger a week ago on Twitter.
Oh, no, I know.
Have you moved to WordPress, or are you still on Blogger?
I did. I just moved about 2 days ago. Okay. So
back in the day was last week.
Yeah. She's young. It's easy to think of it that way.
Oh, you know.
So how are things going, Justine?
It's going good. How are you?
Very well. Are you back in Pittsburgh? I know you're out here briefly.
I am. I'll be back in San Francisco in a couple of days, though. So
that
should be interesting. Yeah.
Now, you use Twitter. In fact, I think you were the first person I ever saw use Twitter. We were taping Mac Break Weekly, and you had both Twitter and Groover running at the same time.
Yeah, I kept getting the Macworld updates from Twitter, and everyone's like, what are you doing over there, Justine? I'm like, oh, just texting everyone in the world.
I thought you had a very busy boyfriend, but it turned out it was a bunch of other people. But
yeah.
I watch Justine's. And you do something interesting. You're not always talking about what you're doing. You try to. There's a lot of kind of humor and non sequitur stuff in there. Do you see it as a creative outlet?
Oh, I definitely do. And sometimes people don't know whether to believe my updates or not to believe them. So.
Well, because you never know. Yeah. One time you say you're with a big snake, and I think she's joking. And then there's a picture of her with a giant snake. Another time you get said. You said, "Oh, Axl Rose just knocked me over," and I thought, "Oh yeah, right." I see a picture of you with Axl Rose, so I don't know what to believe.
I know. That's what makes it difficult, but I guess that's what makes it fun.
You have a question for Ev?
I do. I'm just wondering, what direction do you see this going? Do you see this, where you're going to be able to upload pictures someday from your phone, doing the video thing, or is it going to stay strictly just text updates?
That's got to be, in a way, a challenge to keep it simple.
Mm-hmm. That's a good question. It's one that we ask ourselves pretty often. We've stayed away from pictures or video or anything else at this point because of the desire to keep it simple, but also because of the desire to be able to do it ubiquitously. One of the reasons there are so many interfaces and ways to use Twitter is because it is lowest common denominator text, and that works in IM and SMS and whatnot. And as soon as you start getting into other media formats, everything becomes more complicated. So our stance is basically, if we think we can do pictures, would be the obvious thing to start with, obviously, with as many camera phones as there are out there. But once we think we can do that in a ubiquitous, simple matter and not just add annoyance to people, we would definitely look at it. But I don't think we're there yet.
I would say don't turn it into a blogging engine. It's what it is, and I think that's great.
Yeah, yeah. And there's so much text is really powerful. I mean, it's not going away.
Yeah, I like it. I like it.
Great.
Ev, we're going to let you go. We thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
And
thanks
thank
for
you for years of entertainment.
We'll keep working on it.
Great software. I mean, it's just been really fun. Obviously, you have a real knack for thinking of what's next and making it happen, and we really appreciate it.
Oh, well, my pleasure.
All right. Thank you, Ev. Take care.
Thank you.
That's Evan Williams, who is, of course, the man who started Blogger, Pyra Labs, sold it to Google, went on to create Odeo. And, you know, I thought, Amber, that was a very amazing gesture when he last year bought back all the shares from all the investors. I mean, it was must have been a tough thing to do, but at the same time, you rarely see that kind of integrity in a startup.
It's definitely true. And I feel as though you don't hear enough about Evan. Like, if you look at his resume, I was doing some research on him today to see what he's done. And it's just amazing. Like, even everything from Blogger all the way to Twitter. And I think you're right with Twitter. I think it has a really bright future ahead of it.
It seems like just a throwaway thing, but it's far from it, really.
Underrated. I mean, I'm thinking of like all the business 2.0 polls that they do about, you know, the next sort of big person to come out of Silicon Valley. It seems that he should definitely be on that list.
Yeah, he's a quiet but a very important person. I am so sad that I'm not going to be at South by Southwest, but we will get reports from South by Southwest, I'm sure. If you are going, have a great time and report back to us. Tell us how it was. We thank everybody who joined us on the show. Sorry I didn't get to all the calls. We did extend the show quite a bit just to get as many of you in as we could.
Anything? Okay, what are the dates of South by Southwest again?
It's coming up. I know I was going this weekend, the 9th, 10th, and 11th, but I think it goes through the 19th because, you know, there's interactive and then there's a rock and roll part.
For a guest for One Night on Night at Night, we should get someone from South by Southwest.
We will. Okay, it's a deal.
Let's do that, because that would be great to have someone live down there.
Live report, because it's going on the 9th through the 18th, but so that means the 11th, our next show. Oh, wait a minute. I got some bad news for you. I can't be here the next show. Maybe you can do it, because I have to go. Well, I'm going to this conference, this Radio and Records conference, and I won't be back till late Sunday. Yeah, I don't get until like 8 o'clock. Sunday night. I'm glad you said something. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's you and I talk off the air. We'll figure out if there's a way to solve this.
Okay, let's do that.
I think you could do it without me.
I get
Dane come in here and engineer it, and I think we could do the show without me. Okay, maybe I can call in. Who knows?
Yeah, that would be great.
All right, Amber, should we do our traditional Net at Night spooky goodbye?
Let's do the spooky goodbye. We couldn't end an episode without creeping everybody out on a Sunday night.
I'm going to unmute you all. I want to say good night. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you next time. Good night from Net at Night. Good night, everybody.
Net at Night.
Good night, everyone. Good night, everyone.